This is Rights.Tech. I'm Henrik de Gior. Today I'm speaking with Larry Miller. Larry, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Henrik?
Good. Larry, who are you and what do you do?
I am a professor of music business at NYU in the Steinhardt School at NYU, where I'm also the director of the undergraduate and graduate music business programs. And I produce and post and host a podcast called Musonomics about the business of the music and culture business.
Larry, what are the biggest challenges and successes you've seen with rights management?
Well, I go back quite a long way in the rights management space. And even before I owned a record company or music publishing business, In the early and mid 1990s was in AT&T Labs research, where we were busy commercializing relatively early rights management technology and applying it to solve what we viewed as fundamental and critical problems in mostly the music industry, although later we were looking at other content industries too. And in the mid 90s, those two issues were related to file size, so media compression, and the other was how to deal with permissions around the use and access to music files. And this was all, several years, I would say, in the 3 to 5 to 8 years before Napster happened in 1999. And what we found was that we had amazing technology, and we were dealing at the time with an industry that was enjoying its best years ever. And in fact, in the recorded music industry, the best year in the history of the business was in the year 1999 to 2000. In fact, up until it looks like just this year, and we'll talk more about this year in a couple of minutes. The years 1998 to 99 were the last 2 years of consecutive growth in the music industry before this year. And so there has been a dramatic amount of restructuring and the industry is just a very different place than it was now almost 20 years ago. But I think it's fair to say that I'm known for doing a few things in and around music, and one of those things was being an early supporter of rights management, provided that it could be built and deployed in a way that was not anti-consumer and would be, in fact, transparent for the consumer. And I think that this fundamentally is one of the great challenges of rights management in music over the 20 years or so that I've been either participating in or watching the space, in that just because a technology is available to be deployed in order to enforce the wishes of the rights holders, or at least where music is concerned, that in a world where since 1999, honestly, it has become optional to pay for music at all, that rights management technologies that were being used at the time in music were, I think, in general, deployed by a number of parties in those years in ways that taught consumers that they just didn't want to interact with those offerings and would rather go over speed bumps and around corners in order to acquire music that was in the clear. In music, there were, I think, a number of early successes in music that was wrapped in rights management. In its earliest years, iTunes, which later grew to be a multi-billion-dollar business and by far the single largest customer of the music companies before the decline of paid downloads in the last couple of years in the face of streaming and the growth of subscription music streaming in particular was, I think, the first use case that we had that that this was actually going to work until, very famously, several years later, Steve Jobs did an about face with respect to rights management and just got rid of it, at least in the iTunes store. You know, today, various forms of rights managed music are used, but they're being used in a way that it isn't it isn't quite so painful for consumers, and in fact, not painful at all. In fact, with Spotify last month having crossed 40 million paid users around the world, we view that as being now a very important milestone that, you know, user-friendly, consumer-facing offers for music that is provided in a way that is delightful and comprehensive, you know, and priced right, has finally, you know, gotten traction. And so as a result of, you know, and I'm not just talking about Spotify here, there are a number of other services that are using the technology in a similar way, but that, you know, we are now living through a period where we've had our first, as I said a moment ago, 2 years now, or at least it's looking like, if the last quarter of 2016 looks anything like the first half of the year, we will indeed have our first 2 years of back-to-back growth in music since the end of the last century, and it's been a long time in coming.
Wow. And what's changing with rights management, or needs to change, to your point?
Well, I think that it is less about technology now than the way that the technology is applied, in particular from a public policy standpoint in the United States. And by that, at the top of my own personal list, you know, we should spend just a minute and talk about the DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, in that there have been a number of unintended consequences as a result of the way the DMCA is written and the way content owners need to notify internet-based entities, you know, sites, and in fact, many of them gigantic networks where, you know, many, many, many hundreds of millions of people a month, or in one notable case, YouTube, over a billion users a month, are using content that is about music or has music in it, where many of those uses have not been, you know, directly licensed. And so those web-based companies are able to benefit from being qualified under the safe harbor aspect of the DMCA. And, you know, we could argue as to whether YouTube here in the US and in much of the world, or other companies like YouTube, should qualify for the safe harbor. For me, it's less about whether they qualify or not than whether a takedown notice is sufficient to get content to be taken down and then stay down. For me, if a rights holder or the copyright owner complies with the law with respect to having the notice filed either physically or electronically for content to be taken down that they don't want up for whatever reason, that the content should stay down. Unfortunately, the way the safe harbor aspect of the statute is written, that if the content is taken down today, it can go up again tomorrow. And so, unfortunately, for content owners that are interested in protecting and managing the destiny of their creative output, need to play this time-consuming and costly and distracting game of whack-a-mole where they take the content down one day and it is up in 10 more places the next day. It just doesn't make sense to me. And so from a public policy standpoint, I would hope that over the next several years that perhaps we can rewrite the rules of the DMCA for content that is deemed to be infringing and that should be taken down would actually stay down.
And what advice would you like to share with people interested in rights management?
Over the 20 years or so that I've been looking at the space, rights management has in music and other content industries being sort of front page news in the industry trades to now being mostly less than front page news, but still being not only worthy of serious discussion and research, but there are now entire conferences, such as the Copyright and Technology Conference that we will be doing here at NYU New York University in January, looking not only at music, but also at books and video and public policy and the way that that rights management is being deployed, and the way that the many of the most serious practitioners in rights management are thinking that the world may evolve. And so I think that rights management has now that perhaps the bloom is off the rose a little bit, that the best applications for rights management are barely even noticeable for the vast majority of, law abiding, consumers who now have access to a tremendous amount of authorized and properly licensed content that was never the case before. And so I think that it is still an exciting place to be for people who are thinking and writing seriously about the topic and building, serious solutions. But the hype aspect of the rights management cycle is now long over, and now it's about optimizing both solutions and public policy.
Larry, where can we find more information about rights management?
One of my go-to sources is at copyrightandtechnology.com, of all places, where there is always very thoughtful material being put up by Bill Rosenberg and other authors on the topic, and also at musonomics.com and on the Musonomics podcast.
Great. Well, thanks, Larry.
Glad to be here, Henrik. Thanks for having me.
For more information, visit rights.tech. Thanks again.